This is Ready Radio, preparing you to be ready for anything. Now, here's your survival guide for Ready Radio, John Rush.
All right, Ready Radio, KLZ 560. Thanks for listening today. Live program today on May the 3rd. So we're already into May. The year flies by, and there's always a lot going on. So we got several things to talk about today. First one being storm preparation. By the way, this was a suggestion that came in from some folks that were affected by some of the storms that we've had of late. So not necessarily in Colorado, but in some of the areas that surround us. So thank you, by the way, for that. I appreciate it. And yeah, I thought, hey, great timing. So thank you for bringing this up. I'd be happy to talk about it. And again, we talk a lot on Ready Radio. I mean, what we're here for is to talk about the being ready for the what ifs of life, is how I say it. And that could be anything from an end of the world scenario to just some of the storms we've had of late to any other things that might come along, including just flat tire on the side of the road. Are you ready for the things that might come along? And do you know how to deal with those? Because the reality is, the more prepared you are for any situation, the less stressful that situation becomes if you ever find yourself in it. It's that simple. Now, can you prepare for every single thing that comes along? Probably not everything, but you know, can you prepare for the majority of things that would come along? And the more you prepare, by the way, for even the little things, the more prepared you are when those big things come along. So I think when you get into that world of just, hey, I want to be prepared, and by the way, not overly prepared. And what I mean by that is, you know, have we ever, told anybody on this particular program that you've got to go out and spend, you know, X amount of dollars to get, you know, X amount of years worth of freeze-dried food stored and have that in your, you know, wherever. Storage closet, pantry, garage, whatever. No, I've never said that. What I've said is just make sure that you and your family, if something were to go completely awry, that you're able to handle things that would come along. And I've got some things I want to talk about even in regards to that, because I think there's a lot of people out there that get really overboard on some of that. But I'm here to tell you that when things get that bad, depending upon where you live, you most likely won't be there anyways. You'll be packing it up and going someplace else. For example, if you live in any of the metropolitan areas across the country and you live anywhere close to town, your chances of withstanding everything that will change in that metro area after some sort of a major, you know, worldwide or countrywide event happens, you know, complete power outage, something along those lines, military attack, whatever, the chances of you staying in that area are slim. And the reason is, and most preppers don't even think about this. They think, well, I got enough foods and guns, I'm good. You know, I'll protect myself. Well, until all of the thugs that take over a particular area and are grabbing as many people as they can to either, you know, throw them into the sex slave end of things or just slavery in general. And I'm not trying to scare anybody, but this is the reality of the things that can happen and most likely will happen. You end up with little anarchists running around that control certain areas. And in a place like Denver, you might have 10 or 15 of those individuals running the entire, you know, Front Range area here. And if you live anywhere in that area, your chances of survival in that area, I don't care how much food you have, are slim. Because here's the other thing that'll happen. They'll come take it. These types of thugs will literally go door to door, take everything you have. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have anything. I'm not saying that. But I think some people get so overboard, they literally can spend so much time, energy, and effort and money on packing up that if that day ever comes, which I believe it will, they're not going to be any further ahead than anybody else because somebody else is going to end up with it. They won't. They'd be better off figuring out what's my escape plan, getting out of here, going someplace else where I'm much more able to survive. And that will be in the far outskirts, suburbs, mountains, even way out on the plains. I mean, areas where there just won't be as much population. And I highly doubt that a lot of quote unquote preppers have really thought about it. Now, the hardcore preppers, you know, they're already living on 40 acres. I get it. They're already that individual. But most aren't and most can't do what I just said for obvious reasons. There's lots of other factors that come into play on living on, quite frankly, I live on 5. I mean, even living on 5 acres changes things immensely from living on a regular, you know, neighborhood lot. Lots more work, lots more things going on. There's a lot more expense even in doing that. Things change dramatically. Now go up from 5 to 15 to 20 to 40. And things really start to change when you get up in those larger amounts. So my point is, I think a lot of people go overboard and or go overboard in the wrong areas in preparing. And I'm more of that, take a balanced approach, look at everything you have going on, how would you survive certain things depending upon what might get thrown at you, and how are you going to make all of that happen based upon some of the things that I just said. Now, do I know what it's going to be like if and when that time comes? No. And there's a ton of books out there. I read a lot of those. I get a lot of different ideas on those, by the way. And the reality is I don't know. And here's the other thing. No one does. I mean, there's even some debate on what will work in a big EMP strike versus what won't work. None of that's even, you know, settled. I mean, there's quote unquote not really even settled science on that because they don't know. We haven't have one. Somebody texted in a moment ago and said, my fear living way out on the prairie is that the mobs from the metro areas will find their way to me eventually. Yeah, you're right. They absolutely will. A lot of the end of the world books that I've read, that's exactly what happens. These thugs, these gangs, the anarchists, if you would, they will start in a particular area. And then as that area, you know, they take more and more over, more and more over. They start growing out. Yeah, I mean, eventually, in some cases, there's a couple of books that I've read where they end up controlling several states. Now, these are the books I'm reading. In a lot of these scenarios where they start controlling more and more states, again, the farther out you get, in some ways you're left a little bit more to yourself, if you would. But believe me, they're going to control you and they're still going to keep you in line. And by the way, they will still tell you what you're able to have and not have. It's sort of like total dictatorship. Well, it's anarchist. Whoever's the strongest goes to the top. Everybody else gets left behind. So, going back to, though, what should you be prepared for when it comes to these big storms? We've seen some of these. I was talking to Kent and Judy, my sponsors up in Sterling, Novus Autoglass, what was going on up in the Nebraska area, and you saw some things even down in Texas, Oklahoma, and so on. You know, what should you do to be prepared for some of those big storms? Really, folks, not a lot different than what you would be prepared for any other end-of-the-world type scenario, other than when it comes to tornadoes. And I've seen some of the videos out, and it's like, yeah, I don't want to live there. Sorry. No, not for me. Having a tornado hit your car, hit your house, I can't think of anything more miserable than that. And then looking at all the devastation that happens after the fact. So number one thing would be, how do you stay safe? If you're out in a car, if you're inside of a home, what does your home look like? Do you have a place in your home that's going to be more secure than other areas? Have you made sure you've got that area that's secure? Does everybody in your home know where that particular area is? And by the way, folks, that includes a lot of us that are on the eastern edge of even our metro area. We've had tornadoes in Thornton, for example. Now, we haven't had any like F4, F5s, but, you know, half the town of Lyman was wiped out years ago. It's not that far away. So our listening audience and the amount of coverage we have as a signal is concerned, there's a lot of you listening that could be directly affected by what I'm talking about. So have that number one plan in place. If a tornado's coming, what do? Where do you go, and does your entire family know? Most people that live in those areas, they pretty much know that, although I'm guessing not everyone knows. And the reason I say that is because in Oklahoma, 7 people died. So if everybody knew, 7 people wouldn't have died. You would have gone to safety, you would have had a plan, and you wouldn't have died. So does everybody know this? No, everybody doesn't know this. You'd think it's common sense, but frankly, common sense isn't so common anymore, is what they say, and that's true. Also, what if there's an overnight storm? Do you have the ability to where, if there's an overnight storm, you know what you're doing? Do you have all of the things around you necessary? Flashlights, a go bag, a goodie bag, things along those lines. If you're in your car, how does that work? This particular person mentioned that, do you have a good weather app? And this is true, and I know this. A lot of the free apps are garbage and are nothing more than spyware. Very true. Very true. A good weather app, you will have to pay for. They're not free. not to get all of the good updates that you would require. NOAA, by the way, has a decent weather app. This particular person says that they use WeatherTap, but it's a higher priced app. It's $18 a month. This particular person knows somebody else that uses a program called DTN. Bottom line is, do you know what's coming into your area and what does the weather look like and what is the weather forecast even for that particular day? You'd be surprised. I run into this all the time. Most people have no idea what the weather's going to do from morning to night. For example, we may have some storms roll through tomorrow evening. How many people out there, if you walk down the street and you ask that, would know that? I'm guessing less than half. So you'd be shocked at how many people don't even know what the change in weather is going to be. Nonetheless, having all of these other things dialed in. This person also says having clothes by the bed and shoes or boots in case of an overnight storm or even a fire. Absolutely. How quickly can you get your clothes on, your shoes on, and exit your home or go to that safe place, safe space that's in your home? Do you have that ability? Where is that? Do you have a habit of where that goes? And I can tell you by just watching some of the videos and things that are out there, some people just walk in the bedroom, throw their clothes on the floor, and have no idea what's going on after that. You guys already probably know this. No, that's not me. I could not live that way. So I'm one of those where, yes, I know exactly where my pants and shirt and shoes and all of that is, where if you had to throw that back on really quick and exit, you could. Yes, that's me. I also, you know, have protection nearby, i.e. firearms, just in case. Now, everyone has different scenarios with that and kids and so on, so you have to know your own situation, but this particular, you know, listener had some great ideas. Are you ready for some of these things? And if you're in some sort of a major storm, you know, some of these storms, by the way, can literally have a path that's several miles long for several hundred miles. The devastation is huge. Power will be out for X amount of time, sometimes weeks. And your cars, by the way, depending upon where they're at and what's going on in that tornado, may not be drivable. You may be on foot. Now, I get it. Typically, aid and things like that will come along and help. Now, remember that in an end-of-the-world type scenario, there's no aid. It's not coming. And I think that's where a lot of people get tricked. They think, oh, well, if the lights go out, somebody will come along. No, they're not. So far, the one thing that's unified in every single apocalyptic-type book that I've read or listened to, there's one thing in common. Police will not show up. National Guard will not show up. Reason for that is most of those people have gone home to take care of their own, and they're not on police duty anymore. They're not doing it. Very, very, very few of these books differ from one another. In all of them, they might be a little bit of police presence momentarily, you know, several hours after an event like that, but it doesn't take long for these individuals to realize that, man, this is a major deal and I need to get home to my own family. And they do. And by the way, I can't blame them for doing that. And I think these books are very accurate in that. But believe me, there are a lot of people out there, people that were protesting on college campuses this last week, that feel like if something like that were to happen, all they have to do is summon somebody to bring them things, food and clothing, and it will show up. No, it won't in that scenario. And even a scenario like I just mentioned, where there's a big, huge natural disaster, big hurricane, big tornado, earthquakes, things along those lines. No, you're going to be on your own for X amount of time, even in those particular situations. You're not going to have anybody coming in to help. It's not going to happen. So, point is, go through the process, write out a list, talk to your family, do this together, which, by the way, for a family exercise, there's a lot of people where you could tell everybody to put all their phones down, put all their video games down, turn off the TV. We're going to sit around the table and talk about a particular scenario. And you'd be surprised how engaging even some kids would be if this were to happen. That they'll have ideas as well. Communication, by the way, another thing that's unified, every single book that I read, the communication thing becomes a big, big deal. And before all of you ham operators start texting, well, yeah, ham radio. No, some of these books I've been reading, the thugs the people that actually are taking over certain areas jam all of that. And no, you can't communicate. It doesn't work. Now, how realistic is that? Probably more so than you think. I read one book where, believe it or not, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, who's supposed to be there to help when things go awry, actually became the bad guys. They were the ones actually running around and actually kidnapping people, putting them into the slave end of things, sex and otherwise, quote unquote, to rebuild the nation. Now, it was bad people that got in charge of FEMA, of course, but they were using, in this particular novel that I read, they were using FEMA as the organization to do a lot of just dastardly deeds. Probably the best way to say it. You'd have to read one of the books to know what I mean. But things that are just not even thought of today. I mean, I don't think people realize that when all the lights go out and a third plus of the population starts to die off, we're going back in time 150 plus years. It's that primitive. Outside of some of the modern clothing and ammunition and some of the things that you'd have along those lines and water purification and so on, some of the devices that we have had since then, it's not much different, though. People are washing clothes by hand. You know, there's no electricity. You're not throwing things in a washing machine. Water quits running. You're pumping water. I mean, all sorts of things in these novels, and I don't think they're wrong because most people don't think through those things and have a plan for what would happen. So back to the whole storm preparation. Do you have everything dialed in? Do you know when a storm would be coming? If you're in the car, do you have a go bag there to where if you had some sort of a huge emergency, you had to leave the vehicle? Do you have enough stuff with you where you could survive, you know, a major storm like we saw come through some of those areas of Nebraska and Oklahoma this last week? If you have pets, what's their plan? Do you have a way to contain them, leash, etc.? Is that close by? If all of a sudden you've got to run to the basement and make sure that Fido's next to you, do you have all of that dialed in? Or are you somebody that, you know, takes a dog collar off and it's at one end of the house and they're next to you and maybe they're well behaved, maybe they're not? How are you going to handle that? If they're really well behaved, they'll just stick with you and do whatever you ask. If they're not, though, do you have a plan for that? Maybe you have other pets. How is all that going to be taken care of in this particular situation? Also, and we've talked about this before, especially John from Cheyenne and I have talked about this before, if you get caught in any kind of a bad situation in your car, in your go bag that you keep with you, do you have even shoes and the ability to go from A to B long distance with what you have with you? And what I mean by long distance is, can you go several miles in what you have? That may very well happen depending upon where you are when something were to hit. If something were to hit, I should say. So, again, none of these things are here to scare anybody. This particular texter said, you know, none of this sounds crazy, just some folks are clueless. Yes, a lot of folks are, and it's our job to try to help them, especially when it's our own family and extended family. It's our job to help them understand what goes on. And this text was from a couple of weeks ago, actually last week, and said, hey, you know, even my brother in Texas says it's going to be bad tonight. Okay, these are things that are real. It's happening. We're in that time of the year right now to where we could have bad weather even hit Colorado. And while I say the metro area is kind of immune from tornadoes, I say that, but I don't know that. Just because I've never seen one in my life up here against the Front Range doesn't mean it can't happen. Stranger things have happened. So point is, be prepared. Have as many of these things dialed in as you possibly can. Be thinking about the future and how all of that is going. Making sure that you've got everything dialed in the best you can. Again, you can't think of everything, but try to think of as many things as you possibly can. All right, we'll be back. If you want to call in, feel free to do so. 303-477-5600. Maybe there's some things you want to add to what I just said a moment ago. Text line 307-200-8222, 307-200-8222. I'm going to talk about vehicles you may want to own in a scenario, end-of-the-world type scenario is what I should say as soon as I come back. Don't go anywhere. Ready Radio, KLZ 560. All All right, we're back. Don't forget to check out the website, ready-radio.com. Producer Ann said there's a lot of things up on the website, even some of the things that we did even last week with our guest we had on talking about the prescription drugs and things like that, that, again, you can be ready and prepared for. Also, I got a couple of messages that came in. Yes, we had a tornado even in Highlands Ranch not that long ago. Thank you for the reminder, by the way. Absolutely. Also, somebody talked about how dodging this particular individual, they dodged an EF4 tornado on Memorial Day night 2019 by 400 yards, and another one March 31st of 2023. A tornado will wipe you out, and even with insurance, I can't imagine ever recovering from a total loss. It would be worse than a fire. Also, key point here, know where your car keys are and keep them in the same place. If there's a tornado or a fire, grab your phone, wallet, keys, firearm, and so on. Absolutely. Great, great, great advice. Thank you guys for that as well. 307-200-8222 is our text line. Dave, you're next. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, hey, John, just to reiterate sure. what you were talking about. One of those things, that's what I always used to do when I was working, when I would be clear on the other end of the metro area. And I would always look at, before I left the house, if I had to walk home the next 15, 25 miles, could I make it with what I'm wearing?
Yep.
Condition, how do I feel that morning, this and that. And so if it looked like it was going to be raining or I had to, for whatever reason, wear, you know, dress shoes and slacks, I always threw in a pair of jeans and some more sturdy shoes. So if something happened and I couldn't drive home, I could change at least and start walking. And, you know, on that same note, you can't plan for every contingency. But, you know, just having a little bit of foresight and having maybe a small go bag
yep.
that you keep yep. in your car or that you throw in your car that has bare essentials. You know, a knife, a small flashlight.
Yeah, and Dave, I've even kind of been rethinking some of that of late, and I need to even change some things around on my end. I kind of keep things in, you know, a duffel bag or something along those lines, and what I need to do is change that to a backpack, and backpacks is easy to change from one car to the next as anything. And the fact about a backpack is you can throw it on your back and even take that with you and then have a bag with you that you're not carrying with your hands. You want to keep your hands free for obvious Absolutely. Reasons, Dave, and I even need to rethink that. And your bag should not be, by the way, a duffel bag, but really should be a backpack.
Yeah, and on that note, another website I've been getting on was a place called Survival Summit.
Yes.
And they've got several free video series that they go on, and one of them was like, I can't remember if the scenario was an actual EMP strike or what it was, but going on that scenario, you got to walk home, and it's 20 miles, and you know it's going to be overnight. Can you make it?
Yeah. How are you going to handle that trek home? Dave, there's a lot of people, even if you had to go, which for me it would be that 20 miles, there's some, Dave, that would have a hard time going 5 to 10.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is, you know, it may not look stylish, but, boy, having a good pair of boots on your feet when the weather is crappy outside could save your life from getting hypothermic or getting so wet and miserable that you just can't go on anymore.
Absolutely.
You know, and warm and dry.
And Dave, too, the other thing, and again, this is in a lot of these books that I've listened to and read. Yeah, everybody kind of thinks, well, it'll just be a trek home. You know, I'll just walk down the shoulder of the road, whatever, and I'll make it. Dave, everybody else will be doing similar things. And believe me, the minute things happen, the thugs will come out in
exactly.
droves. The reality is you will be going through all sorts of weird ways to get where you need to go, and no, it won't be walking down the shoulder of the highway.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. But, you know, the veneer of civilization is very thin.
Yes.
And when something catastrophic like that happens, everybody's going to be, most people are generally speaking, about 80% of them are going to be just trying to do what you're doing, trying to get home.
Yep.
But it's the other 20% who have those evil intent who are going to look at this as, this is my time to strike. This is my time to get mine. And if they can't start looting, they'll just start pillaging and raping along the side of the road on those people who are just trying to walk home.
Yep. Nope, you are, you're spot on.
And, you know, unfortunately, it's the world that we're living in now. And, again, it is not about, like you're saying, trying to scare people. It's about just, hey, think about this. You can either do something or choose not to. It's up to you. That's the freedom that we have as Americans. You either plan for it or just don't and hope for the best.
Yeah, and this is one of those too, Dave, where it's like, You know, I can imagine a lot of Christians saying, well, you know, when that happens, you know, Lord will take care of me. I'll pray a lot. You know, we'll get through it, blah, blah, blah. Well, and I'm not trying to be a naysayer, Dave, and while I'm just as you know, up on prayer and what the Lord can do for us and so on as anyone, the reality is I also know that he gives us a brain and the ability to plan and prepare and be ready for certain things.
Exactly.
And I think you're being extremely naive and saying, well, we'll be all right. The Lord's going to see us through. That's like the guy that says, you know, I've been praying about a job for the last 3 months. I still don't have one. And you ask the question, well, have you sent any resumes or done any applications? And the answer back is, no, I'm just waiting for God to send me one. Well, yeah, dodo head, yeah. You're never going to find a job that way.
Exactly. And throughout the Bible, there's all these parables and that Jesus gives, and you know, in the Old Testament even, of that same thing. I mean, that old saying, I'm not sure if it's in there, but God takes care of those who take care of themselves. You know,
you're very naive in thinking otherwise, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man to fish, well, he eats for the rest of his life. So that's just basic skills. It's telling you to have those basic skills on how to take care of yourself, whether
yep.
it is fishing or growing vegetables in your backyard or
yep.
being able to defend yourself or thinking of a plan like you're talking about, how to get out of this situation.
The other thing that's been in a lot of these books of late, Dave, along the lines of what you're talking about too, which I think people are going to need to be really careful of if something like that were to take place, is who do you trust? Who do you, you know, try to team up with? If it's somebody that's not a friend, neighbor, relative, something along those lines, who are you really going to trust? And, you know, because again, as the anarchists grow and they end up with people that literally work for them to go out and gather things for themselves, it really becomes difficult to even know who to trust and not trust. And even though there's a lot of people out there, Dave, that are used to having the fish and not fishing for themselves, believe me, when they see you walking along and you've got the fish, you might yeah. you may think that they're harmless and they're not going to come after you, Dave. When these people get really hungry and after several days of not having anybody show up, FEMA, etc., to help them, it's going to be pandemonium.
Yeah. And I can tell you this from firsthand experience. When the hurricanes hit down in New Orleans, I went down with the team to help provide support and, you know, for the local community. And it was interesting to see how even a homogenous society as New Orleans is, predominantly, you know, African-American, and those people had been born and raised for several generations in that area, that neighborhood, that parish, how quickly they turned on their neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, even with everybody looking and thinking alike and knowing each other for many, many, many years, a lot of them didn't have nothing to begin with, and now
yep.
tragedy hits, and they've got even less
yep.
than nothing.
Yeah. No,
spot
on, Dave. No, and I think that's where a lot of people get really naive in thinking that, oh, you know, I live in a great little neighborhood, we're out in the suburbs, everybody gets along, you know, we'll all survive this together. No, they won't, Dave.
Yeah, and that's just it. I mean, you hate to think about that, but you really got to, like you were talking about last week, you've got to start thinking about setting up that community of people. I know right now for myself, sure, I've got plenty of food, I'm preparing, I've got, you know, weapons to defend myself, but I'm by myself. My nearest relative is 15, 20 miles away. So I've got to be able to think of, how long can I defend
yep.
my position by myself before I need to say, this is it. I've got to bug out and hopefully walk my way out or drive my way out
yep.
and get to some place where I know I can trust those folks.
Yeah, and this is the other thing too. And again, a lot of these books talks about these things, but some don't, by the way. I mean, the alternative modes of transportation where, you know, you should be in good enough shape to be able to hop on a bicycle, be able to ride and do some things along those lines. You know, I think, Dave, at times people just think, well, I'll just hop in my car and I'll be good. Well, what if your
yeah.
car, A, gets, you know, what? First of all, is it going to run or not? If it does run, who says that you're going to have it for very long because somebody else may come along that doesn't have one and take yours? I mean, this becomes
yep.
literally survival of the fittest, and at the end of the day, you may very well not have what you think you're going to have.
And on that same note, John, something else folks need to think about, and I worked with folks like this who should know better, you know, they only know one way to and from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Familiar with the surface street. Everybody thinks, oh, well, I'm just going to drive down to Colorado Springs. I'm going to hop on I-25. Well, what happens if you can't get on I-25 because it's clogged with other vehicles. Everybody has the same idea, or
correct,
broken down vehicles.
Correct.
Do you know how to get around that?
Correct.
You know? You've got to be familiar with the surface streets, be able to get around whatever obstruction is ahead. Be aware of your cardinal points. To know exactly if I travel north.
Yeah, and everybody over, because most people didn't grow up like you and I to where you had to know where you were going and you got a map out at times and you learned how to read a map. So many people now just, plug in the address and they follow the directions and that's how they get there. And Dave, there's with traffic and so on, I use those same apps. I'm not going to say that there's anything wrong with that. But if I had to get home one of probably 40 different ways, can I? Well, I'm a native. I have an advantage. I've lived here my whole life. So, yes. But even if you're not, to your point, you need to learn those ways.
Yeah. And more importantly, like you're talking about with those same apps, I use them also. But the thing is, how many stories have you heard in the last couple of years of people listening to Google Maps or whatever GPS, and it takes them literally over a cliff
and
kills them? Here recently, they had hundreds of people stuck in the desert out in Nevada.
Yeah, I saw that.
Trying to get back.
Yep. I've seen
that.
And Dave, along those lines, and this is where, when you get to really know an area, this is the other thing about that is there's times with me even where I'll be like, okay, wait a minute, you're going to take me this way? Yeah, no, I know there's a better way to get there than that, and I'm not going that direction. The same thing happened to me this past Sunday. Wife and I were going someplace, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going that way. That's the dumbest way ever. I'm going this way. And so there's times where even knowing the area and knowing that the GPS is wrong, that's okay. You need to be in charge, not it.
Yeah, exactly right. It's good for a backup in an unfamiliar area, but still you should try to familiarize yourself. And most importantly, go out and buy yourself an atlas. They are still available online or over at Barnes & Noble.
Absolutely.
Buy yourself an atlas. So when that happens, you can throw that in the car or throw it in your backpack and start hiking and at least have a basic idea of, okay, I need to take these roads or stay off that road, or I can take these back roads or whatever, or follow this river and get to where I need to get without drawing attention to myself.
Wouldn't be a bad idea, Dave. You just kind of sprung something for me. Wouldn't be a bad idea, and I still have some of these things tucked away. I probably need to drag them out. But all of this whole Front Range area from literally probably here to the western end of the state, you really ought to go out and get some good topo maps. They still make them. They're still available. They're not that expensive. Have those things readily available, because everything that you just said, Dave, they show, including elevations, where could you sneak into different areas and what's where and so on. And learning how to use those is a great thing. And I didn't know this, Dave, until I met somebody the other day that had never read a topo map. I thought that was common knowledge. I didn't think anybody didn't know how to read one, but there's a lot of people out there that can't even read a topo map.
Well, you can give them a map of the metro without them, holding it upside down.
True.
You know what I mean? How many folks know that anytime you look at a map, the top is always going to be north?
Correct. Most don't know that. So, good point.
Yeah, most don't know that. So you got to be able to familiarize yourself with that. Another one I wanted to bring up, there's a book out there called The Lost Ways. And it goes through a bunch of different ways of prepping food and certain medicines and how to can and store food over the long term.
Okay.
And one that I thought was really interesting was this guy was putting fresh eggs, into a mason jar with lye, pickling lye.
I've seen
and
that.
He said,
I've heard that.
Once you put it in there, he says, those eggs are good for 2 years.
Yeah, I heard that.
You can open that jar up 2 years later, crack that egg open, and it'll be just like the day you put it in there.
Yeah, people forget, Dave, that when the power is out, you have no more refrigeration. That has gone. No more ice for your drink, unless it's, of course, wintertime. But even then, you got to be careful. I mean, reality is you're not going to have the same ability to preserve food that you once had. You need to learn even some of the basic skills of, salting meat, drying meat, some of those sorts of things. How do you build your own smoker out of a freezer? Things along those lines. Dave, most people aren't resourceful enough to handle those things.
Yeah, and it's readily available on YouTube, at any place you want to just search on, the goggle, it'll tell you.
Yeah.
All you got to do is put in the effort, and it's one of those things, boy, once you get interested in it, you can really take yourself
down. Oh, you can. You can get down the rabbit holes, and you got to kind of be careful how much time you're spending, although I think the more knowledge you gain, those are things that will be triggered in your mind when things like that may happen. Dave, here's a question for you, and I don't know if I've ever really asked this, and maybe we've talked about it, and I just don't remember asking this specific question, but in the times we're talking, how important for survival, do you feel it will be for those individuals that have some mechanical slash life skills along those lines versus those that do not? Not saying that everybody has to have mechanical skills to survive, but how do you feel that that person that's never twisted a wrench, never doesn't even know how to turn a screwdriver, how well do you think they fare, and what would you advise that person to do now to be able to be more familiar with some of those basic things?
Well, like that old saying goes, the one-eyed man amongst the blind is a king, right? So learning those kind of skills is absolutely necessary. There's plenty of how-to things. You can go to Home Depot or Lowe's. They've got all kinds of books there that you can buy, that you can refer back to. And I prefer having a book.
In that case, absolutely.
Exactly. What are you going to do when the power goes out? You're not going to go on the Internet.
Nope.
You know, it's like a Bill Fortune's first book, 1 Second After.
Right.
There was a point there that I thought was really poignant where they're at the college and these kids are wondering how they're going to get supplies of food. And somebody said, well, can't we just send a fax or an email? You know, still.
Yep.
Still, in that scenario, there's still folks
yep.
who aren't grasping the situation that the power's gone. It's not coming back, you know.
Yeah, the brevity of it. And I think every book I've read, one of the other things that they're pretty much in agreement on is the brevity of the situation doesn't set in until probably 48 to 72 hours later when people finally realize that, you know, I guess nobody is coming, then things really start to... That's not to say they don't unravel quickly in some of the inner cities, like, you know, the minute the power goes out, the looting starts and so on. Yeah, big cities, that's going to be an issue, Dave, period. Now, some of the outskirts, that won't be as big of a deal. But, yeah, I think once people realize the brevity of what's going on, it even gets worse. There's stages of this, is my point.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing is, you know, I've always thought of myself as being a student of life, and, you know, I never can know enough. And so I'm always willing to learn something new. And so going back to your first point, if you don't know how to operate basic hand tools, get with somebody who does. I mean, right now you can get on that old TV show, This Old House, and those guys
Good
are always
point.
Going through tools. And this is what this tool does, and this is how you do this. This is how you fix your plumbing, or this is how you, you know, can filter water, and so forth, so on. There's plenty of shows out there now while the Internet and the electricity is up, so that you can teach yourself. And if you don't, I'll guarantee you your local extension office or your local rec center is going to have programs like that.
Yep. Somebody asked just a minute ago, too, Dave, that should we keep a bicycle in the back of our vehicle or our pickup bed? And I said, you know what? This is my answer back. It wouldn't hurt, or you could steal one ASAP right after something like this happens. Now, this is going to sound funny to a lot of people, but frankly, I don't know that I would carry a bicycle around in the back of my vehicle at all times, but I think, Dave, having a good set of bolt cutters in the back of your vehicle would be just as good.
Because, exactly, the majority of the folks out there are going to be looking for that quick and easy way out. So if you have that bicycle, you just gave them that quick and easy way out. Whereas if they look in the back of your truck or in the back of your car and they see some tools and a bolt cutter, they may not even think twice about
that. That's right.
And
especially if that's kind of hidden, covered, you know, put it away someplace where no one sees it, behind the seat, whatever. That bolt cutter, by the way, it's another one of those common things in all of these books that I've read. That becomes one of the handiest tools people own.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got a big pickup truck that I've got plenty of room to carry these extra tools, but I've got, you know, basically a hammer. A hammer is a tool that you can take anywhere.
Very well.
If you need to pry your way in or dig your way out of a place, that claw hammer is going to save you. If you need to start throwing some nails down to throw up some wood or rip some wood apart, that claw hammer will save you. It's a basic hand tool that probably everybody should know how to operate or have. And, you know, and in a pinch, there's a nice little self-defense weapon right there.
Yep. Very well said. Dave, great comments, man. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Have a great rest of your afternoon. Good stuff. We'll come right back. I got a few text messages that came in when it comes to some of the storm preparedness end of things. But, yeah, folks, really, every one of these novels I've read, one of the things, and I've not had this on my tool list, but after listening to some of these novels, I have one. I don't necessarily carry it with me all the time. Probably should think about it. But a good, you know, medium to large size bolt cutter, when everything goes awry, your ability to acquire things, and keep in mind, it'll be every man for himself at that point, but your ability to acquire things with a bolt cutter will improve greatly when you have one and no one else does. So that's another tool that I would have in my arsenal of things that you want to have with you, whether that be at home or you're carrying it around. That is one of those items I would definitely make sure that you have in your possession. And no, there's nothing illegal about owning a bolt cutter. A lot of people have them. They're used for all sorts of different things, but probably something worth having in your arsenal of things. Ready Radio, it's ready-radio.com. We'll be right back. This is KLZ 560. Hey, those of you, by the way, that listen to us out of state, thank you, by the way. I appreciate it very much. And we've got listeners literally from here to Nebraska, Wyoming, of course, Kansas, people texting right now from Oklahoma. I appreciate it very much. Somebody from Oklahoma said, remember 25 years ago today, an EF5 tornado hit Moore, Oklahoma, one of the scariest days ever. Last weekend was frightening as well, but this person still loves living there. And right now he says there's a tornado warning south of Lubbock, Texas right now. And agree on the free apps. They're all for the birds. You need a real app with notifications, no ads, and so on. So far, you've probably been one of six or seven people that have talked about the apps on your phone. Don't use the free ones. Figure out which one you like best. Pay for it and get that app. Somebody also said that when they're telling you a tornado is coming, it's most likely already there. When you've got intermittent storms coming in and things like that, you should have already have gone home, been home, got things settled, and so on. Because by the time they tell you to do that, it's most likely already too late. So all of you listening that are in some of those areas, that includes a lot of folks even up and down the Front Range, and we're in that season where these things can happen at a moment's notice. It doesn't take a lot. I am not a meteorologist. I don't know what you specifically look for. I've been alive long enough to know I can definitely look at clouds in the sky and colors and so on and pretty well know that things are happening. You can sometimes even smell the air and know that something's coming. But again, to be really accurate in today's modern world with the applications we've got for your phone and so on, absolutely find a good app that works for you and head that route. This other site too, by the way, Dave, thank you. The survivalsummit.com. They've got a lot of great things on there. I'll go through and view some of those things, Dave, and they've got a lot of great tips and things that are there as well. I was going to cover some of the vehicles that may be worth owning in case of a end-of-the-world, you know, EMP-type scenario. So I can do that quickly, although this is probably a full show by itself. I'll put some things together and try to do that. But I got a text message here, actually an email a few weeks ago, that said, hey, trying to decide on a end-of-the-world-type vehicle. Wife rented a Jeep EV and loved it. Toyota BZ4X is interesting. So is the Jeep we just mentioned. This person has EMP shields on some of the other vehicles they own. How would a EV work in an end-of-the-world type scenario? Well, if you've got off-grid capabilities, you've got solar power, you've protected all of that so that things will continue to work even after an EMP strike, yeah, I think an EV might work really well in that particular scenario. The only problem that I see is a lot of the EVs are very low to the ground. They don't have a ton of ground clearance. They're extremely heavy. And the reality is their off-road capability isn't all that great unless you do a Jeep or a Hummer, which the Hummers are so expensive that for an end-of-the-world type vehicle, that is probably not practical. But some of the little Jeep EVs aren't bad. They're not full EV. They've got an engine that will charge or that will propel the vehicle, and or it can be propelled off the battery, and it's a plug-in. So it's almost like a plug-in hybrid in a way. Think of it that way is really essentially what it is. And the Jeeps work extremely well. Could you use that and keep your supply of fuel around much longer, given the fact that you can drive a Jeep, 35, 40 miles on the EV side? And what I'm getting at is, as far as the end-of-the-world type vehicle is concerned, this isn't going to be something that will be pretty. Again, every book that I've read, for the most part, these vehicles will get used and abused. They will be shot at. There'll be all sorts of catastrophes that happen. You need to make sure that they've got really good, solid tires, probably the ability to move other things, a winch, et cetera. You know, having these things really equipped where you've got the ability to go to A from A to B, knowing that the whole world has collapsed. If an EMP hits, most vehicles will not be running. There'll be dead cars everywhere. So having a vehicle that is really prepped and ready to go, and remember, the ability to make things once the end of the world scenario hits, unless you've got really good solar power and that supply and you're able to run some welders and do some things along those lines, the ability to fabricate things in that scenario just got a lot worse. Now, a lot of you that are handy, you can pretty much fabricate anything you want. But think for a moment, if a lot of that went away, if power is gone, or you're trying to even, you know, store power and not use as much, you know, depending upon the time of the year this happens and so on, what ways do you have of fabricating things when that's gone? Also remember that, and this is something else these books are pretty unified on, is you got to be in stealth mode once this thing hits, because everybody else is going to be running around trying to figure out what you have. So even having solar panels and keeping lights on when it's dark will be really difficult, because then they know what you have and they'll want it. And you're going to have to do everything you can to try to keep things quiet and protect what you have, therefore not letting anybody know what you have, where you are, in fact, that you're even around. This is where a lot of these books get off on people having, you know, cabins in the woods. They're hidden. Nobody knows they're there. You only have a fire during the day, not at night. Or sorry, only a fire at night, not during the day, so you can't see the smoke. All those sorts of things you have to really think through on an end-of-the-world scenario, and it's why I'm pretty convinced that trying to survive in the city will be darn near impossible. You will have to get out of the city some way, somehow, get out into some of the outer areas, suburbs, or especially in our case, the mountains, because if you don't, your chances of survival will drop immensely. Every book I've read, there's it's rare that anybody in the big cities that's not a part of the thugs, gangs, and anarchy isn't surviving. Most of them die off. It's just that simple. It's the nature of what's happening at that time with everything going on around you. Now, keep in mind, when it comes to an end-of-the-world type vehicle, you really have to think about, what am I going to do on the EMP side to protect everything? Yes, there's EMP shields, but other things in your home and so on, you're going to have to think through to make sure that you've got all of that completely dialed in, so that once this happens, you've got the ability to move forward. I, for one, would probably not go the EV route. I would look at owning an older vehicle, honestly, driven off of points, condenser, coil. I mean, old school. Those are easy to fix and keep running. You need a good stash of fuel around. It'll be hard to get fuel after that, and you'll need to have devices around to actually get fuel, which I've talked about in the past. That's as simple as either a hammer and a punch and a hose. People are wondering, well, what do I mean by that? I can explain that in a later program. But again, think about all these things. Be prepared, especially with the weather. That was the main stress of today, is being prepared for any of the bad weather we might have this time of the year. And as always, remember, you can go to ready-radio.com, find all of our past shows there, the links to the different things we talk about as well. That's it for today, though, guys. Have a great rest of your day. Whatever the next program is, please stay tuned and listen. If you're listening to a replay, this has been a live show on May the 3rd. This is Ready Radio, KLZ 560.
And opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.